You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 5th of April 2014 on Monocle 24. From zines to mag zeitgeists, trendsetting in troublesome regions and experimenting with design and content. From current affairs to travel expeditions and from food to sex, the independent magazine sector is flourishing in a bloom of printed material. This week we meet some of the men and women who are at the helm of this magazine revival. This week on The Stack, we'll be venturing to the Dutch city of Arnhem as it plays host to some of the best independent magazine talent from all over the world. From the hobby editor that's printing something spectacular on the side, to getting some industry insights on distribution and retailing once a magazine has been published. This episode of The Stack has the independents covered.
The trials and tribulations of getting a magazine from concept to coffee table seem to be overshadowed by the sense of creative expression that so many here in Arnhem seem to relish in.
In addition, we'll be checking in with our editor-in-chief, who'll be flying us around the world of commercial magazine retailing from Lisbon to Hong Kong via Zurich. All that and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show with me, Tom Edwards. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. Now, we'll be off to Arnhem with our David Pleasant a little bit later in the programme. But first, we shall start, as promised, by heading to Hong Kong. You may be wondering why it is me, not our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, from whom you're hearing this week. And that is because I am here and he is there. Let's speak to him now. Tyler, thanks very much for joining us. You're at our Hong Kong bureau, of course. How's things over there?
Listen, it has been it's been a bit of a trip this week because, as you know, we had a very big event. Hopefully some of our subscribers, readers, listeners are listening right now. We did a very big event in Lisbon on Monday. A little bit of trivia, but not just Portugal, but Lisbon ranks as our eighth biggest metropolitan centre where we sell our magazines in the whole world, Tom.
It's a pretty extraordinary figure, isn't it? What about the sort of general landscape then in Lisbon particularly? It's quite an exciting market, isn't it, print-wise?
Well, it is, and I think you chose the appropriate word, landscape, because we held our event at the Portuguese Geographical Society, which is an absolutely extraordinary monument building. And they have this wonderful members dining room and bar where we held the event, which is great. But what you see in Portugal is a real love of paper. It's something of an Anglophile society as well, I think. And this is what's amazing. Here you have a country of just, 10 million people versus what Spain is, four or five times the population, maybe close to five times the population. We sell more magazines in Portugal, which is really something. But there's a very dynamic and vibrant independent newsstand scene, very, very passionate, just independent sellers, which is great. And you see there's strong newspapers. And I don't want to say that just because perhaps technology is not moving the same. It is, but there is something very unique that's going on in Lusophone culture when it comes to print. They like paper.
Which is always good news. We like that too. Let's follow the course, I guess, Tyler, that so many great Portuguese explorers have described in the past towards China. And that's where we find you now, of course, over in Hong Kong. What about the landscape, to continue the theme, where you are right now? Any surprises for us?
Well, I can't jump over to the former Portuguese colony, Macau. I will, though, touch down because you cannot fly direct nonstop from Lisbon to Hong Kong. So I had to touch down in Zurich. And I was in Zurich last week as well. I did a speech. There was a major airport conference. So all of the major players, the great and the good of duty-free, the people that we occasionally curse and we have to clear, we get our passport stamped or we get through security, and we've got to go through that maze of duty-free. Well, all of those people were assembled, but we were talking to them about, of course, the role of magazines, the importance of a dynamic kiosk. And one of the great things I heard from one of the operators in Zurich, who said, people can get very excited about Lancome nail varnish and all kinds of things, but they said they improved the offer of one of their newsstands, and this was something they did with the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. So you've got a branded newsstand. It's not operated by the NZZ newspaper, Tom, but it is. It's run by Valora, who of course are one of the biggest newsstand players. But anyway, they branded it from the newspaper, and they said what it has done for sales is extraordinary. They were talking about a shop which does, you know, 10 or 11 grand, you know, a day just on magazines, which was very heartening to hear. And he said, as far as he was concerned, he said, magazines print, they have a very, very, I'd say substantial bit of runway still when it comes to airports.
More interesting figures. I just wonder on that broader point, Tyler, then. I mean, do you think that there are enough airports that have really good newsstand offerings, or is it across the board a bit of ideas bucking up still needed?
You do know that there is a board meeting in Zurich on Monday for our company, and it's something that we're going to discuss, because I think that's one of our challenges. It's the same challenge for lots of publishers, that yes, not all airports, you know, punch at the same level. And I'm in Hong Kong, and I can say that Hong Kong Airport is our number one sales point in the world. If you look at a contained geographical environment, I think there's something like 15 kiosks at Hong Kong Airport. Some are operated by Relay, some are operated by our friends at Page One. Both do a very good job of selling magazines. But I think what's interesting, though, is if you look at a lot of airports, you'll have to look at airports in the UK, Tom, where you'll see there's a monopoly, that you've got one player who's at most terminals. And what you have in Hong Kong is proper competition. You've got two, you know, big international, well, one big regional player, one international player, duking it out just to do a better job. So, you know, the range is always good. Both companies are on their toes. And then they're able to offer, of course, the publisher, you know, better deals, you know, better positioning, etc. And I think we need to see more of that. That alone, I think, would improve the lot for magazine, you know, owners and publishers, as much as book publishers as well.
Tyler Brulé, our editor-in-chief from Hong Kong, thanks very much for putting us in the picture there of a print from Lisbon to Hong Kong, and for joining us here on The Stack. Up next, as promised, we're off to the Independent Magazines Biennale. Stay tuned to The Stack here on Monocle 24. Now, for the rest of the programme, we're going to head to the Netherlands and to Arnhem, which over the past week has been hosting the Facing Pages Independent Magazines Biennale. The organisers hope to take stock of the past 2 years of development in this very exciting corner of the print spectrum. New platforms, new techniques, rebrands and restyles. The Facing Pages Symposium has been a melting pot of magazine professionals and enthusiasts. The Stack's producer, David Pleasant, was there, soaking it all in, and he brings us this special report.
As independent magazine publishing seems to grow from strength to strength, something we're only too happy to chart and celebrate on The Stack, it seems fitting to come to a genteel, design-conscious place like Arnhem to see several hundred of those people behind this quiet print revolution meet for a couple of days to listen, learn, and debate. Now for the third time, this Dutch city plays host to the Facing Pages Independent Magazine Biennale. A two-day symposium and ongoing exhibition, gathering some of the many print protagonists, from young editors to established, award-winning designers. The theme is simple: make magazines, not war. The programme for the symposium is as diverse as this small and flourishing sector of print is itself. First, I'm going to speak to somebody who should hopefully be able to give me an overview.
My name is William van Giese, and I'm one of the founders of Facing Pages.
Why have a biennale on independent magazine publishing? What's the need?
Well, the first need is there isn't any other. For me personally, it's not a way to get money or something, to earn money. We have our commercial projects, and I think with most of the people who are making magazines, it's sort of a love or a passion or a hobby project in the first place. But there are quite a few which manage to take to a next level and make money out of it. Not only by selling copies, but also with advertisements and for instance, Another Escape, the girl just quit her job and is doing full-time Another Escape magazine, which is awesome. She's terrified if she's going to earn enough money, but the idea and the passion for it is there, so she can continue the project of the magazine.
Is there a kind of process back into perhaps a more commercial field, whether it's a non-independent magazine or a glossy title? Do you feel that there's a bit of a two-way process? Some of the themes and the kind of artistic expression that we're seeing, is it filtering into the more commercial magazine or news industry?
Yeah. Well, what you started with, for example, our design studio, like we do a lot of commercial projects, but we can make those commercial projects, or the clients come to us because of a lot of the independent projects. So not only it's a sort of business card for us.
The independent magazine is a business card, showcasing the best of a particular designer, editor, or publishing team. The passion and enthusiasm for magazines here at Facing Pages is such that it's hard to believe that for many, the independent magazine element of what they do represents only part of their working day. One title, thanks to its unique editorial approach to design reporting, is, despite its diminutive size, making a big impact on the newsstand.
My name is Peter Bilak, and I've been speaking here at Facing Pages about Works at Work magazine. We've started just a year ago, so it is a fairly new project, but it was clear that we're not building just a project, a magazine project, but building a community, because it's not worth doing magazine without its audience. So I've been always very keen on meeting the readers, organizing talks, symposias. Last year we've organized over 20 different kind of reader meetings, very active launches. So this has been very important for us.
And you were telling me earlier about some of those stories, and the breadth is really fascinating. And, you know, it kind of goes from geopolitics to security to defense to violence to society, all within the context of these products, really, or ideas. Tell us some of the stories that you've covered recently.
Well, I can pick a story from each issue. Like in the first issue, we had the story of this fly in a urinal, which is a quite well-known, you know, Dutch phenomenon. It's been around for decades, and people know it as an urban myth, and they know it as a one-sentence story. And we would present, you know, like a quite elaborate story of the history, why it happens, backed up by research, how efficient this is. Because the story is that there's an image of a fly in the urinal, which men make men aim and reduce the cleaning cost. And you can reduce the cleaning cost by up to 80% in really public spaces. Very subtle, you know, behavioral design, because men are very simple creatures, and you know, see an aim, they target it, and you know, therefore it makes a big difference.
The infinite editorial possibilities of the independent magazine is something that is becoming very clear to those involved in the industry. The trials and tribulations of getting a magazine from concept to coffee table seem to be overshadowed by the sense of creative expression that so many here in Arnhem seem to relish in. Whether it's risque title Baron from London, which claims to occupy the space between pornography and art, to current affairs and war reporting, the scope of work is clear for all to see this year.
My name is Bessa Lutze. I'm the chief editor of Crossover 2.0. It comes out twice a year because we work in three languages. We work in Albanian, Serbian and English. So every edition comes out at the same time in three languages. So we only do two numbers a year. It's really like a magazine about politics, culture, society. Those are kind of our taglines with the magazine. We're trying to bring stories from Kosovo and the region, but also it's not limited to that area. We bring stories from everywhere in the world. It's a thematic magazine, so each number has one theme. We've done six issues so far, so we've looked at image, corruption, religion, sex, public space and art. So each time we have this Kosovo and Western Balkans focus, but then for us it's very important to bring stories from the rest of the world, because in our region the debate focuses so much on like the region and the relationship to the EU, and there's way more than just like that political communication. You know, there's more stories in the world, and we feel like especially younger people and younger generations, they have to be exposed to those kind of stories.
Despite all those difficulties that you've talked about with the distribution, with that production, do you see your brand and your title kind of, do you see print as a kind of vital part of that?
I do, because I think when you're documenting as well with print, you know, like on things get lost online and they will get lost, you know, and for us, if like with Kosovo 2.0, we see the magazine really as documenting like the first few years of our country.
From Kosovo to Beirut and the Middle East, I wanted to speak to another young editor who has taken the publishing bull by the horns and turned to print, despite the challenges, diplomatic, logistic or otherwise.
My name is Ibrahim Nami. I'm the editor of the Outpost magazine. So I created this magazine about possibilities in the Arab world almost 2 years ago. And it has grown a lot since. We're basically trying to use narratives of possibility to counter narratives of impossibility. that are highly entrenched in the Arab world. Because it's important, I feel, that the stories that we publish, they're important in helping readers understand how the Arab world is changing and how the Arab youth are changing it also.
And can I ask how old you are?
I'm 28.
Very young to be an editor.
We started this with very minimal resources. We're a bunch of young and ambitious people, basically, who really believed in the power of narratives to shift perspectives. For our transport issue, we wanted to explore how we as Arab youth are completely disconnected and touch upon the issue of borders, because it's a topic that always comes up in our conversations and in our stories. Because as Arab countries, we're completely disconnected from each other. So what we did for our transport issue is we tried to entertain the idea of creating an Arab region that's connected by high-speed rail. So we mapped out the existing rail networks, the functional ones and the non-functional ones, the ones that are currently being built and the ones that are being proposed for the future. And we laid all those lines on the map of the Arab world, and we created this completely fictitious Arab region that's connected by high-speed rail. So it's trying to blend fiction and reality to shed light on key issues that are hindering us from progressing or from moving forward.
That was Ibrahim Nehme of the Outpost magazine. After a short break, we'll be browsing some magazines at the Ateneum shop and meeting a designer making infographic waves in the world of magazines.
If you're after a soundtrack to your working day, look no further than Monocle 24's Globally Minded playlist. We play the very best upbeat music from around the world, around the clock, whether that's jazz from Japan, pop from Paris, house from Hamburg, or soul from Seoul. It's all picked by our team and presented by our editors. So get lost in music with Monocle 24's playlist right here, day and night, on Monocle 24.
You know what he says? Cut your text in half, double your readers. You know why he says that? Because he rents a workplace in a graphic design studio. He is indoctrinated.
And that was the sound of journalist slash industry stand-up comedian Martijn Brugman, who was talking between speakers at the Facing Pages Symposium here in Arnhem. Editorial freedom and creative expression may be one thing, and here you can feel a passion for magazine publishing as a means to its own ends. But key magazine business necessities, such as distribution and retail presence, are still high up on the agenda. Back to Peter Bilak of Works at Work magazine.
Well, we try a very simple idea, which is a very obvious one, and it's involving readers into a distribution model. And we prefer to pay the readers to do the distribution rather than outsourcing to a third party, which is not involved with the magazine in any way. You know, they don't have any involvement besides trying to earn money with this. And they may be many, you know, in traditional distribution, you have many middle parts, and each takes some percentage, which make the magazine rather expensive. Often, our magazine was sold for higher price than we agreed on, plus they would take significant percentage of the price. So we try to avoid this and bypass all the traditional distribution by speaking to people who are familiar with their local city. So we work with readers who live, say, in Beirut, and ask them, well, where would you like to see it? We use this, what we call the social distribution. We offer the discount between normally the reserve for distributors, we provide it to the readers. And they can either make a bit of profit by reselling the magazine, or they can basically distribute it amongst a group of peers, friends, communities, schools.
And that increasingly personal relationship with the reader or subscriber is one of the key trends that keeps coming up here. But the newsstand remains a key window on your printed product and brand if you're setting up a magazine, large or small. This year, the Facing Pages Biennale is appropriately well served when it comes to magazine retail. Ateneum Nieuwscentrum, based in Amsterdam, is for the Netherlands, and perhaps the whole of Europe, a magazine institution. As a print bastion, this well-researched, truly eclectic selection of independent and commercial titles is a browser's paradise. Luckily, there's a pop-up version of the store just 200 metres away from the symposium, so I'm going to go and take a look.
Well, my name is Anneke Reinders, and I'm a graphic designer and bookseller, and I'm import manager in the special magazines at Ateneum Nieuwscentrum. Well, I think we started when we saw that actually topics from glossy magazines were moving towards, or glossy magazines in general were moving towards the net and pads, and that was a new development, and then a kind of room came for smaller magazines, and also the subjects moved from glossy magazines to other magazines, so food magazines suddenly also got a Lucky Peach and that kind of titles. So we noticed stuff moving, and we thought, or I thought, or Athenaeum News Centers at that time thought it was a good idea to step more firmly into that and commit ourselves to selling these types of magazines. Also because they're close to our heart and close to Athenaeum's history, because when we started in the 60s, we sold loads of self-made anarchist magazines or hand-stamped magazines or that kind of stuff. So we also kind of returned to the roots of Athenaeum News Center in a way. We are standing at a fairly large table where we see relatively a lot of naked body parts. And we could well say that is the trend of the last month. So
we've had food.
We had food.
And now you think it's more sex?
Now we have naked women.
Okay.
The men we already had, of course, like the butt, the kink, that kind of, but then it's related to being gay, and this is a sort of new heterosexual thing, but still.
So naked men is a bit passé.
But naked men is passé. Well, we would like to see naked heterosexual men. Apparently, they're still not ready to bear themselves.
One criticism, perhaps, of this independent publishing kind of bubble or boom is that kind of feeling of very temporary feeling, and or is that very much part of its nature?
Well, do you think it's temporary when they try to fit into a movement like all the magazines that look like Kinfolk. They go up and then they go down again because they too much try to put it in a kind of mold and reproduce a feeling which they maybe not totally feel, and then you're lost already. But the little magazines, or the magazines which are made with a vision, like The Eye or The Colors, who's been around the longest as a quality magazine, you see they are able to maintain this quality. So,
some pearls of magazine wisdom from Athenaeum Newscentrum there. Now from the newsstand to the news itself. And to be even more specific, designing the news. Award-winning editorial and infographics designer Francesco Franchi seems to have the whole magazine industry talking. His approach is for the designer to be as close as possible to the editorial process, and the pages he has created for Italian newspaper Il Sole 24 Ore's magazine supplement Il got quite a few gasps from audiences here at Facing Pages. Meticulous design rigour, as well as sheer artistic experimentation, jumped out of each of Francesco's presentation slides.
I'm Francesco Franchi, and I'm coming from Il Sole 24 Ore, which is the Italian newspaper. I think that the moment we are living now is a great challenging moment for a designer to be in the newspaper market, because design is not just limited to an aesthetic aspect of the product, but nowadays design is involved in the distribution aspect, is involved in the organizing content on the page, on the different devices. So I think that for the experience that I had before to start working at Il Sole 24 Ore, and now which I'm working there, is important for a designer to be in a very close relationship with the journalistic staff. But I think that nowadays the designer works a very important role, because is very close to the editor-in-chief. So, for example, I spoke with my editor-in-chief every day, and we organized the magazine together. The designer is involved in every aspect. For example, nowadays, newspapers, magazine has to work a lot with the brand. So the design aspect is embracing all these new aspects, developing stores, developing new products, developing a sort of, we can say, merchandising product for branded by the magazine, telling story multi-channel, so across different media, across the digital, so tablet or smartphone. And I think that design has also to cover an important aspect in selecting materials, so working on the quality of the product as well. So all these aspects.
And what is Francesco's opinion on the magazine redesign?
should strong, successful design feel the pressure to constantly turn itself around and present something new?
Of course, it depends by the product. For example, at the magazine, I wanted to create a sort of way of working like a design studio, so not like a routine, so it's not like that everybody has to do the same things every time for every issue. But the initial idea was to create a magazine that can be reinvented every time, so reinventing, adding new section, adding new modules, but also reinventing in terms of languages, so experimenting, like we saw the attempt to translate a literary piece in an infographic. Just because we concentrated on that product and we wanted to experiment and to stimulate the Italian editorial panorama that was not so innovative, I think.
Editorial and graphic creativity, a passion for innovation, or maybe a penchant for the past. The Facing Pages Independent Magazines Biennale has gathered an enthusiastic community of industry insiders. Refreshingly, the D word, or digital, seems hardly to have been given a mention as a topic per se. In 2014, a presence, or at least an editorial reasoning, on what media platforms to place your magazine is taken as standard. But speakers and attendees seem to talk of print now as an opportunity. Whereas 2 years ago, the digital shift might have been seen as an insurmountable challenge, now the focus seems to have gone back to basics. Back to the fundamentals of what makes for a great magazine, both large or small. Plucky, visually confident titles from Beirut to Pristina seem to be going far and beyond bucking any kind of trend. As when it comes to the independents, print is perhaps the only trend in town. For Monocle, in Arnhem, the Netherlands, I'm David Pleasant.
That was David, our producer there, bringing to an end his report and this 84th edition of The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards here in London. My thanks both to David and to our studio manager, who also edited that report, Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, as ever, drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget, as if you would, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. You can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud as well. But for now, from me, Tom Edwards, for this time, it's goodbye.